So this is a great fortunate event for me. I get to speak with another man who travels in the classics, both that are revamped faithfully, but are also revamped irreverently. Aaron Posner, both a director and a playwright, he recently directed with Teller, the magician of Penn and Teller fame. He and Teller co-directed a production of The Tempest at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, which, for my money, was the definitive interpretation of that play, Aaron. So thank you, first of all, for making it so I never have to see that play again.
You're so welcome.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 473, Meet Aaron Posner. Happy New Year! We're very excited about this upcoming 2016 for the Reduced Shakespeare Company. We've got a lot of fun gigs coming up this year, including performances in a country we've never played before, which we will reveal and talk about in a few weeks. But perhaps the thing we're most excited about is the premiere of our 10th stage show, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged, at the Folger Theater at the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. this April and May. And at the Folger, we'll be bookended by my guest, Aaron Posner, who's directing a production of Midsummer Night's Dream before us from January 26th to March 6th, and writing the world premiere District Merchants, a variation on Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice, after us from May 31st to July 3rd. In addition to co-directing his amazing production of The Tempest, Aaron and Teller previously collaborated on a celebrated production of Macbeth, and Aaron's also won three Helen Hayes Awards for direction, all for productions of the Folger. And all of that is in addition to his work as a playwright. Aaron has written a new adaptation of Uncle Vanya called Life Sucks, and is perhaps most well known for his adaptation of The Seagull called Stupid Fucking Bird, which is one of the top 10 professionally produced plays in the U.S. this year. I was in D.C. just before Thanksgiving last fall, and Aaron was good enough to meet me for coffee and talk to me about his work, and we began by talking about his really wonderful production of The Tempest.
Hopefully we've done that for a lot of people. That was our goal, was the most entertaining, the most engaging, the most literally magical. But, our continued ambition is the best production of The Tempest that's ever been done, and we're hopefully on our way to doing that. We hope it still has more steps from here.
Well, and it's one of those directorial concepts where you go, oh, here's a concept, but it's born of the text.
Well, you know, when one directs a Shakespeare play and you get it right the first time, I think, good luck, that was well done, you got so lucky. Right. I feel that for myself or for anyone, you know, trying to convince ART, where we did it originally, American Repertory Theater, saying, like, here's my credentials for why you should trust me with this huge production, The Tempest. I've done two productions before. Neither of them were that good. But both of them had things that I liked, and both of them had things I respected, and lots of great performances and things, but they were both deeply problematic because it's a really, really hard play.
Yeah.
But by the time, so Teller and I spent, a couple of years in conversation and working it out and trying to figure out how, it's a play that I think where more is more. It's essentially a pageant. Mm-hmm. It wants a kind of heightened theatricality. It wants a lot of stuff. So from that beginning was this, and it's a long story, but we sort of unwound this idea of putting magic at the center, which led us to this magician Willard the Wizard, who was a early 20th century traveling tent show magician, and that led us to, like, okay, so maybe the magic vocabulary of the early 20th century would be exciting for this production. Well, if you're going to have an early 20th century Dust Bowl magic tent show Tempest, what music do you need? Well, if Shakespeare could have gotten anyone, he would have gotten Tom Waits.
Of course, because Shakespeare was no fool.
Exactly. Yeah. So you add Tom Waits into that mix and then try and create a monster. You bring Palabolas into the mix to try and create a movement vocabulary that no one's ever seen before. And so a kind of and then Teller and I are both, as I think you are, populists.
Yes.
Like, great art, exciting, challenging, you know, as esoteric as whatever, but we want people to fucking like it.
Yes.
And want people to go, and not only for people, not people for whom it's rarefied or they should enjoy it or it's what they need to do, but rather that this can be popular broad entertainment as it was back in the day.
Absolutely.
And as it can be. And so we also went like, we want this to be Shakespeare accessible to anyone who sees it, people who've never been to a Shakespeare play before, but are Tom Waits fans or Penn and Teller fans, or Palabolas fans, or, you know, like, or who are just Shakespeare curious or whatever it might be. So that was the goal in the creation of the piece.
Well, you, God, you certainly nailed it. And the only drag is you get people coming to see The Tempest going, oh my God. And then they see another Shakespeare production. They go, well, wait, that wasn't anything magical at all.
Well, we're not the only good one. There's other ones out there.
Tell me about how you first started working with Teller, because you did a production of Macbeth at the Folger, right?
Yeah. I met Teller when I directed a production of The Tempest in Philadelphia in 1993. We cast a guy named Bill Collins as Gonzalo, who was the former Philadelphia Inquirer theater critic who had recently retired. He and Bill, Teller and Bill, had known each other for years since Bill had reviewed his work when he was part of the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society, going all the way back. You know, it all gets a mesh. They performed upstairs at the Walnut Street, which is where the Ardens started, the theater I started in Philadelphia. So anyway, I met Teller then. In 98, I asked him to help out with the production of Midsummer Night's Dream. I was at the Folger that opened our new space, which he did a little bit of work on that. But that led to a conversation about Macbeth, and many years later when I was the artistic director at Two River Theater, and Two River and the Folger did this co-production of Macbeth, and we started working together sort of more intensely.
I mean, that seems like one of the great one of the great choices is, as a director, you hire great actors, but hiring Teller has got to be really, really
up there, too.
Well, magic is so inherently theatrical. It's underutilized in the theater. And this idea that when someone writes magic into a show, you're writing in something that is designed to sort of astonish the other actors in the show. So we always make the jump like, oh, this actor feels astonished, but we in the audience are going to watch a gobo rotator spin around, and we're going to go, oh, that's magic.
Right.
But when you put actual magic tricks into a show, then all of a sudden the audience is in the same place as the character in the show, going, what the fuck is going on? I don't understand this. I am amazed. I am astounded. I am astonished, whatever that is. And when you can put the audience in the same energy, the same experience, you mentioned the Backroom Theater Project in Chicago.
Backroom Shakespeare Project in Chicago,
which is the same kind of idea. It's totally different, but it's sort of like, let's have an actual experience of something that is going on in the room and that we can all be engaged with, not we're going to sit back in our seats in the dark and we're going to watch you do your stuff and we're going to sort of keep out of it. So putting magic in the center, putting a band on stage, you know, creating this certain kind of energy that can arrest and astonish, that's our goal.
Well, and talking about Backroom Shakespeare and the Folger and Chicago Shakes, these are all spaces in which the actors can get at the audience easily, and I think that's so part of it, that live experience.
Well, we took the Chicago Shakespeare space, already a kind of courtyard space, and made it even more intimate by putting some of the audience is right there on stage, right up there next to the stage, sort of shoved into the corners
stuff,
so that it would be as visceral and as immediate experience as possible.
Can you talk a little bit about how you approach the classics, or was there a decision where you made, you know what, I can mess with Shakespeare, I can mess with Chekhov, that would be fun, or how did that evolve for you?
I try, there's so many long answers to that. I want to make plays that I want to see. I've seen a lot of theater. I've been jaded. I see a lot of things that I don't enjoy very much.
Yeah.
So I am, whether it's a new play or whether it's a Shakespeare play, I am trying to find ways that will actually engage me, that will push people around. You know, the expectations of theater often are so low and so mediocre.
Yeah.
I find that so sad, and I know what it can do for me when I've seen a truly great performance, ones that can send me into the night with my blood pumping and my like life feels more full, more exciting, richer. Mm-hmm. And that's the experience I'm trying to create. In the classics, you're starting with this amazing text, but it needs to be, Shakespeare was taking texts and rediscovering them and reimagining them and creating them for his say, I think that's an ongoing obligation that we have. So whether it's going back to Shakespeare and doing that, or going on to Chekhov or whoever else it is, and re-engaging, reimagining, re-exploring, that I'm a big fan of of those. I mean, like, I feel like, because that's the ongoing march of knowledge and art that is building always on what's come before, but always saying, no, but that, I need it to speak to me, to my friends, to what's going on in the world right now. Yeah. You know, so that's when I'm asked to direct something at times, that always that question of, like, I don't care if it's a classic or not. Not only does it say something to me, do I have something to say to it? Right. Am I able to enter into a meaningful conversation with the work that speaks to my own life, that speaks to the concerns and the things that, that are affecting people that I know and care about?
Yeah, it seems like architects got to this idea of creative reuse about 30 years ago, and theater's beginning to, because I remember when I was in grad school, and the theater that was associated with my school was what I called Red Rope Theater. You know, it was just museum theater. It was just, oh yeah, this is Heartbreak House the way it was probably done 100 years ago, but who cares?
Yes, whereas I did Heartbreak House on a huge pile of furniture poured onto the middle of the stage, and cut a couple characters and focused on the things that I mean, like, you know, you kind of go, like, these reverent.
Yeah.
There are things to be reverent to.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I direct Arcadia, which is maybe one of the best plays written in the last 50 years, and I go, like, no, I'm not going to fuck with it. I'm not going to touch a word. I'm not going to do a thing. I don't want any clever choices. I'm just going to do, I did that at the Folger, but I'm just going to do the best production of this brilliant play. But when things are 100 years old, or 150 or 200 or 400 years old, They it's not that it's broken, but it does need us to engage with it to bring it into today.
Well, and it's interesting too, because you want to be reverent to the play, not to the production, not to the way it was originally produced. You want to be reverent to the characters,
or reverent to the intent, reverent to what was the impulse behind it. You know, this is the same thing with the Chekhovs I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Chekhov was radical. He was the most radical playwright of his day. But he's been imitated by almost literally everyone for 100 years. To do Chekhov now is museum theater. So again, I was saying, no, what is honoring that radical impulse to engage people in something they'd never seen before?
Yeah.
To be willing to have people say, I hate this, I don't know how to watch this, this is weird, why would I watch these people just doing stuff, you know?
Right.
But so, you know, these cycles go around and around.
Well, and you're, as a director, well, and as a playwright, you're writing the plays you want to see, but you are the first audience for these things. And if it speaks to you, hopefully it'll speak to other folks.
One, you know, that's it's a good thing my tastes are sort of nice middle brow tastes. And that I'm what makes me laugh, it's particularly good when I'm doing children's theater, because I figure if I laugh my ass off, then most 5 or 6 year olds will laugh at that as well.
Very good.
But, you know, no, yeah, I just try and entertain myself, because I don't know any other guy. You know what I mean? You can't, to play to a theoretical audience is so much harder than going, like, I'm going to engage with this as best I can. I will trust that if it feels like a hole in my brain, and that's not a H-O-L-E, but a W-H-O-L-E, if it feels whole, if it feels complete, if it has integrity to itself, that will be the truth for an audience. If it's funny for me, hopefully not. And that's served me pretty well.
Hello, folks. This is Mike McShane, and you're listening deeply and completely to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Yes.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This month, we'll be performing The Complete History of Comedy Abridged in Marietta, Ohio and Madison, Georgia, and The Complete History of America Abridged in Hillsdale, Michigan. We'll be adding more winter and spring dates very soon. And, of course, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C. from April 21st to May 8th. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with playwright and director Aaron Posner.
So you're about to direct Midsummer Night's Dream at the Folger. Will you please, as a favor to me, make the lovers funny?
That will be my absolute goal, and I've cast funny and engaging and surprising people. You know, the sort of ultra-handsome lovers that end up with their clothes off,
right,
always in their underwear for no reason that has, but it's become one of these received things that it feels like every production of Midsummer does now.
Oh, look, the branches tore their clothes off. Yeah.
Oh, my God, please, no. I think that my lovers will be funny. What I hope they will be, that I can't speak to for sure, is that they will bring who they are to the table. You know, Midsummer as a play that truly, and particularly if you're working in an amazing place like the Folger, where the vast majority of the audience will have seen Midsummer, even the young people will have seen Midsummer.
God, yeah.
They know it. And I don't think you illuminate a play like that by the cleverest concept or by the most you can do. What we will always be interested in, and I think this is the same, even though The Tempest has a trillion bells and whistles,
yeah,
at the core of it was trying to tell a very, very human story about a man and his daughter and revenge and hope and forgiveness. And Midsummer, I feel like if you go to those actors and go, no, tell me what you understand about marriage, about young love, about disillusionment. What do you know? My friend Holly Twyford, who's a fabulous actress here in D.C., she's playing Bottom in this production. So what does she know about what it is to be an actor who feels they can do anything, like who wants a chance to play every possible role? You know, like my wife Erin Weaver, who's playing Puck, what does she know about mischief? What does she know about a desire to mess things up, to just see people squirm? Where does that live in her? Where is that resident in her?
And as her husband, where does that live with you? You probably have some answers to that.
I don't, but I'm excited to find out. You know. So I'm, you know, this is a fairly low concept production of Midsummer. It's saying like, let's find out what we can find out about these human beings through the lens of this show.
That's great. I mean, Shakespeare's plays are hard to rehearse because you don't want 4 weeks. You kind of want 6 to 8 weeks because there's a lot of characters to invest in, and you sometimes don't get the time to work with every character that you want to work with.
Yeah, you want to go deeper if you possibly can, and so you end up making. I mean, the reality of our lives means that you end up making fast choices faster than you want.
Right.
But people are amazing. Actors are amazing about rising to the challenge, particularly if the challenge is about revelation rather than ornamentation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no, show me more of your heart. Show me more of your soul. Show me more of your mind. How do you process this? And I feel like at least the actors that I look to use are the ones, and there's many that I use over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, my good friend Eric Hissom is playing Theseus in Oberon, and this is maybe my, I don't know, 10th, 15th show with him, because he goes to the real places and he does the real stuff. Same with my wife, same with Holly, and then I've got some fabulous newcomers as well.
Well, and I think that's overlooked sometimes, the idea that the actor must bring who he or she is to the part. You're not just putting the part on.
Right.
You're letting the part grow out of who you are.
Well, you can put it on, and certainly people do.
I know.
No,
but most of the time, for me, it feels like, oh, they're acting.
Yeah.
Oh, look at them wearing that character.
You know, everything that I find interesting in the theater is all about, you know, it's the core irony, right, that most of us got into it in high school or junior high school or college, whatever, going like, oh, I don't have to be myself. I can put on this mask. I can hide behind this.
Right.
But
or in my case, it was, oh, I can meet girls?
Exactly. Well, that's for most people. But the reality or the paradox that says, no, it has nothing to do with hiding. It has everything to do about revelation. And it has everything to do with, you know, the things I talk about the most now are courage and generosity, right? The courage to put your stuff, even under the guise of a character, to put your real stuff out there on the stage. And the generosity of willing to do that for an audience night over night and share your heart and share what makes you fucked up and share what makes you wonderful and put all of it out there. You know, that's what I think the great actors do.
Well, and courage and bravery are two, courage and generosity are two of the five, I think, mottos of the Backroom Shakespeare Project, too.
Yeah, it's funny. I did notice that when I read their, you know, I read their sort of manifesto. I was like, well, I mean, it was actually in the Backroom Shakespeare Project and that manifesto, I have to say, you know, it like a lot of great things, like it wasn't new to me, but it did express beautifully things I had been thinking about and wondering about and exploring in my own work. It crystallized some things for me in a way that has been helpful and influential to me, so I'm very grateful to them.
Well, and I've been giving Sam Taylor's book, My Life with the Shakespeare Cult, as presents for a lot of the year, so spoiler alert, a few people on my Christmas list, you're probably going to be getting that book.
I didn't know that it existed until today, and I'm going to be going out and getting one myself, unless you'd like to get me one. That'd be fine, too.
Opening night present for Midsummer.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit? The Renew Shakespeare Company at the Folger in 2016 is being bookended by Aaron Posner. You were directing Midsummer before us, and coming right after us is a new play that you've written but are not directing called District Merchants, which, if I understand correctly, is The Merchant of Venice set in post-Civil War Reconstruction era Washington, D.C. Do I have that right?
You do indeed.
Can you talk more about that? Because it sounds very, very cool.
It's very interesting and very challenging, and I hope will be very, very cool. You know, I've been working hard on it for the last year or so. You know, Merchant is a famously difficult, complex, challenging, broken, hard play.
But not racist, thankfully.
So as I have engaged with it, and although I've never directed it, I've thought about directing it, I've been asked to direct it, I never really wanted to. Because I didn't know, again, I didn't know how to have that conversation with it. But I wanted to have a conversation with it, so I decided to have a conversation with my own imaginings of it. And so entered into it trying to explore what it was. Found that through myself and my dramaturgs, my two excellent dramaturgs, Ayanna Thompson and Michelle Ashro, who both are connected with the Folger, that it ended up being really a conversation about blacks and Jews in America and about sort of what is it to come from under, and how does that interact with the sort of the power on top, and what is that story about trying to create opportunity when the opportunity doesn't really exist or may exist? And so it's engaging with a lot of things that I find provocative that I have no answers for. But that I'm really interested in engaging with. And so, you know, it's that same thing we were talking about earlier. I'm hoping that if I engage with it with integrity and complexity, and I will trust that other people will be interested by that engagement, even though I have nothing like an answer to offer anyone, but hopefully some honest engagement with really thorny, difficult ideas.
Well, and the hope is if you keep asking the questions, some answers might appear.
Or better questions, or at least, I do think that there is a value there's a value in the conundrum, right? In the sort of running into ambiguity and running into, not the, we'll circle back to Teller. Teller calls magic the gift of a stone in your shoe, in that it bothers you because you don't know how it happened. You don't know how it worked. And it becomes a kind of irritant that bothers you and provokes you in a really interesting way. Well, I feel like in some ways that's what good theater should be all the time, is the gift of a stone in your shoe. At times it just wants to entertain you, and that's a different kind of gift, which I actually love, and right. I think is something like Midsummer or something probably like the show you're doing. Uh-huh. Like, these are different kinds of gift that says delight, enjoy being human, engage with the world, and promises that things will come to a positive conclusion. Midsummer says, it's okay, everything will work out perfectly. That's the promise of that play.
Right.
But when you want to enter into other kinds of conversations, that gift of saying, here's an irritant that will bother you for some time. Good luck figuring some things out. Good luck figuring out how you can live in relation to really difficult, endlessly complex questions.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your favorite adaptation of a classic via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter, and I hope you'll post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, stupid effing Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Jennifer Ansbach. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to our old friend Mike McShane. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 473 1419ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.